Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And today we have Dr. Paul Yohannides. I am thrilled to have him back on the program. It's been way too long. And this guide to getting it on is in its seventh edition. The Philadelphia City paper described it this way. Simply put, this is the best sex guide available today. The best. He gets so many wonderful reviews. Let me just give you one from a sex educator, a professor in psychology, Robert Francoeur. I'm convinced the guide is the best educational text I've used with my students in 35 years. Let's see if Dr. Paul is on the line. Are you there, Dr. Paul?
I'm here. How you doing today?
Good.
Did you get your smoke detectors fixed?
Yeah, I did. We had a pre-interview yesterday, and I was having all this chirping, and then the guy came in.
Well, and, apparently Diana's so hot, the fire detectors go off.
Paul, my goodness. It was so much fun to see you in Monterey. We had an ASEC conference there. That stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And you presented sort of a general sex ed plenary. And I didn't get there quite in enough time to hear it. But, of course, it got rave reviews. You always do.
That's very kind of you.
Yes. And at the back of your book, I think you write with so much humor, and there's so much information. And of course, that's one of the things that makes this the best guide. You say that you're a research psychoanalyst. This means he went to school for way too long. Paul lives on a beautiful bay in the Pacific Northwest with his wife, daughter, dogs, ducks, geese, llamas, and a goat. Do you still have all those animals, Paul?
We got two goats now.
Two goats, okay.
And the cougar got some of the geese.
Oh. So well, you really are in a rural area.
We're definitely in a kind of a rural area, yes.
Yeah. And you're in Oregon, and I'm in Washington State.
You being in Seattle, you're
mm-hmm.
not too rural.
But it's not so rural here, of course. But... yeah, you moved from Southern California, didn't you, to be in Oregon?
About 16, 17 years ago, yes.
Oh, so it's been a long time. So.
It's been a while, yeah. My wife is from Oregon, so.
Uh-huh. Good.
She's in this area.
Uh-huh. And so I want to tell people about your website, which is guidetogetting.com. That's guide number two. getting.com. And Dr. Paul has a blog on Psychology Today called As You Like It. Do you like Shakespeare, by the way?
Well, we try. We try.
Okay.
I had to come up, I wanted it to be, you know, if you're doing blog listings,
mm-hmm.
try to have a letter that's toward the front of the alphabet.
Oh, sure. That's a good idea.
So that's why we came up with that one. It had nothing to do with Shakespeare. It had way more to do with getting toward the front of the alphabet.
Okay. But you have some very provocative subjects, and you can go to on your website and find a link to your blog, Psychology Today. Some of the ones that I found fascinating were oral sex, oral cancer and oral sex, and then you compare sex survey responses of five articulate women and five things to learn about lovemaking from porn. Now, your sex survey, people can go to the website and take your survey, and this will contribute to your the new website that you're working on. Could you tell us about that, please? Because you expect to have it done, I think, the end of next month.
Well, yeah, we'll give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've done a great job as sex educators sex education programs and, mm-hmm. and resources for gays, lesbians, and transgendered young adults and teenagers. But I think we're just done a horrible job with straight males.
Interesting. Yes.
And so I'm trying to design something that might actually work for straight young males. And for the, you know, and for their partners, mm-hmm. women mm-hmm. who love them. So we're going to do our best in that way. It's got to be very different than almost anything that's out there right now. We have new constraints. You know, the competing sex educator for today is pretty much porn. So
yeah,
you got to be able to find some way, some reason for them to feel like, wow, it's worth visiting that site and seeing what it's got to say every day.
Wonderful. And of course, what you've used in your guide now in its 7th edition, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is lots of humor, wonderful illustrations. I mean, one can learn so much about anatomy just from reading your guide and especially looking at the illustrations.
Well, you know, it's very, very fortunate to have an incredible illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
Been working with the book for years and me for all 7th editions.
Yes.
He's just about as good as an illustrator get. I don't think there's anyone who's better working today. But also...
And you say he's an internationally recognized illustrator and of fantasy and comic book art, so...
Right.
But he took very well to sex, I think, based on his great illustrations.
Yeah, no problem making that shift.
We're good.
But, you know, we're constantly finding out new information as well. For instance, with the newest research that actually someone from not far from you, the University of Washington there, is doing, I discovered that the angle of a couple of things in the illustrations of the clitoris were off. And so this last printing, I was able to work with a urologist up there, and she gave me all sorts of input. We went back and forth, and we made little tiny adjustments until we got it just right. And
wow.
So we've changed the illustrations of the clitoris in this printing as opposed to the last printing. So you
now,
think,
is it still considered true that the clitoris has about 8,000 nerve fibers, nerve endings, and the penis has about 4,000, about half as many? Is that still true?
Well, we're starting to find that mm-hmm. it seems that the number of nerve endings in the glands of the clitoris
mm-hmm.
vary something like 10 or 12, 14 times between different women.
Mm-hmm.
So one woman might have several times more nerve endings than another woman. So I don't know that it's relevant anymore to say, well,
mm-hmm.
you know, clitoris has 8,000 and the penis has 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
It seems from research it's quite possible that men have way less variation in the nerve endings in the penis than women do. Women have in their clitoris. Now,
well, in general, women have more variations, don't you think? I mean, we're a little more complicated in reaching orgasm and some of the other things. Men, I don't want to be condescending toward men ever, but wouldn't you agree that women, in terms of relationships and sexual arousal, maybe are just a little more complicated?
Well, I think I think it's different
mm-hmm.
for women,
mm-hmm.
and the problem is we tend to use a male model.
Most
mainstream porn is strictly a male model.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at porn, the guy usually doesn't have to fake an orgasm.
No.
The woman almost always does,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
few women can come the way that it's portrayed in porn.
Mm-hmm.
Most
mm-hmm.
mainstream porn, few women could. So
mm-hmm.
they have fake orgasms.
Yes.
So it's all a male model, and as long as you work from that male model, yeah, women are extremely complex.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a different you know, culturally. If you find a little boy who's playing with his penis, the parents kind of laugh or say, okay, well, whatever. But if a girl is masturbating, a little girl's masturbating, boy, they can sometimes get come unglued because, you know, she's a little slut in the making. And so, or maybe the parents are cool with it, but a caregiver or a grandparent will kind of give the girl, you know, the evil stare or even slap her hand. And so, you know, girls grow up with way different messages. With boys, it's still okay to call a penis. And in fact, in middle school, they'll refer to it as a penis. That's cool in biology. But I think a biology teacher in middle school would probably get fired if he or she described a clitoris.
Really? Even and, now?
Even now it's as bad as ever, if not worse. And I think part of the problem is because the clitoris has probably no other function than pleasure.
Exactly.
And so, and so is it that women are more complex, or is it that we do a number on women's sexuality from the time women are small, and so we don't take the time, or, you know, women don't know women, and men don't know women, just because of the way culture approaches women as opposed to the way it does men? I don't know.
Yeah, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. You do talk in your book about women who are multi-orgasmic often coming from, well, the way I would term it, I don't think you did in the book, but secure attachment, where parents are loving and don't allow the daughter to touch herself, but suggest that she do it in private. And, you know, I got really lucky because I grew up in an environment like that.
Yeah, that's a big difference, isn't it? As opposed to growing up in a environment where you're always being, you know, you have to hide your sexuality.
And exactly.
When you hide your sexuality from your parents, at what point do you start hiding it from yourself? I don't know.
That is such a good point. Yeah.
I think in some ways maybe the fact that, you know, if a boy's aroused, he can't hide it from himself.
He can't hide it.
Where maybe women are more able to hide it from themselves. And so that's also another issue that adds to the complexity.
When I was at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center, a favorite quote was from Laura Berman, who was part of the group, that no pill or anything will help a woman if she hates her husband, you know, testosterone or anything. So I was there. It was the mind-body approach, and I was there to help with the relationships, to talk about the mind and the relationships. And that often did help. Now, you are, you've been doing this research for a long time now, and it took you some 7 years before your first guide was published. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. So is there, as you work on the new website, and I don't know if you're going to do another edition to your book. I mean, this is just a great guide, and it's in lots of colleges, and it's Barnes and Noble's favorite. I mean, it's come a long ways, hasn't it, from the beginning?
Yeah, very fortunate.
So anything new in sex research? Back a few years ago, you talked about Viagra for women might be new and testosterone. Well, that didn't pass FDA. And I really liked what you said back then, that you wouldn't believe how many women who report low sexual desire are suddenly cured without pills or patches when they find a new partner who wants to talk about sex. Imagine that. But is there anything new that you have been discovering lately?
No, it's a bit more complex than I probably phrased it then, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A woman can love her husband very much, but the sexual spark left the marriage a long time ago, and that's particularly challenging.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes it's easier if you don't like your partner.
That's interesting.
If you love them dearly, but you're no longer sexually attracted to them, that really makes it a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because
you've worked with that.
Yeah, of course. They're like more like they become more like sister and brother.
Yeah, that's your area. So you could probably talk about that forever.
Yeah, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, but
I'll chime in, of course, because that's what I do.
Yeah, but we're. You know, we've also, we're at a point in our culture where it's still a challenge to get funding for this just regarding pleasure, sexual pleasure. Now, you can certainly get funding if you talk about something awful that's a result of sex, or, you know, you can get good funding if you want to talk about study bullying or sexually transmitted infections. Or unplanned pregnancies, and these are all really important things.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't. It's really hard to get funding for anything to just study sexual pleasure. That's a real challenge.
Yes.
Because we don't, for some reason, in our culture, we just have. We're still, we still got those Puritans in the back of our mind.
Yeah, that's our legacy in some ways, our history.
Yeah. Yeah, it remains.
Yeah, it lingers. I was really privileged in 1995. I was on a faculty. I was talking about aging and sexuality because, as you know, but my listeners know I'm also a gerontologist, and I've really been interested in aging and sexuality. So that's what I was talking about at this conference in Washington, D.C., and I met Dr. William Masters. This was in 1995, and I think he died a couple of years or 3 years later. But he said he gave some really good advice to the older man who is worried about losing his potency. And at the time I met Dr. Masters, he was already 78, 79. And he said, talk to your partner. Tell her you have these concerns. She's probably concerned and afraid to tell you. And then talk to a competent sex therapist, sexologist, about how to reactivate your bedroom scene. And he finally said, I thought it was just such a humble, lovely definition of good communication in a relationship. He said, it's the privilege of exchanging vulnerabilities. Now, isn't that a great concept about good sexual communication?
that sure is, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
And you say the best sex tip ever is to listen to each other. So, I mean, it fits in, doesn't it?
But it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have the words.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you listen if the person doesn't have the words?
And yes, how do you listen?
For especially for straight males, a lot of times we don't particularly have the words we're supposed
mm-hmm.
to. If you look at the model that porn is teaching, it's that, a straight male is kind of a robot with a penis that's made of steel.
And quite oversized.
And huge, right. So, there we have
the porn model.
That's the porn model, and
mm-hmm.
that. Well, maybe some guys in their teens and twenties can, in early thirties, can kind of fake to aspire to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're talking about an audience who's once you get in your sixties and whatever,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of out of reach.
Exactly.
And so maybe the porn view that's become so prevalent now is even more discouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you, in your Psychology Today blog, you do, one of your articles is Five Things to Learn About Lovemaking from Porn. Can you just say a few words about that here?
Well, I think, one of the most toxic messages mm-hmm. from porn today is mm-hmm. that, first of all, a guy whips out this humongous penis,
yeah.
and anything he does with it, a woman is going to be satisfied with.
She's in ecstasy.
She's in ecstasy. Automatically, he magically knows what she wants, and
yeah.
she never says no. She never says yes. He just magically knows wherever he's going to stick that thing. Boy, she's going to be faking orgasms within a minute.
Right.
And there's a really toxic message for mm-hmm. women as well as men. We're seeing more and more young women who really think that a good lover magically knows how to please her, automatically should know how to please a woman.
Oh, so then that keeps her from speaking up.
And feeling that she needs to make the effort to mm-hmm. learn herself and explore together.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing in porn, the porn message, that you need to explore together and learn mm-hmm. together. And it, a lot of times you don't have the words.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. You still, that doesn't stop you from exploring together. And like you say, that does lead to being vulnerable. But so that's a, there's no such thing in porn as vulnerability, is there?
I don't think so. And we always know how it ends.
Yeah, it's magical. I always say that that there's ultimately the message of porn and the message of abstinence only sex education are identical.
That's fascinating. Yes, expand
because,
on that, please.
Well, because in porn,
mm-hmm.
A guy magically knows how to please a woman, and a woman is magically pleased the second he whips out a big old penis.
Yeah.
In abstinence-only sex education, you know, a woman is magically pleased the minute the couple gets married. So,
I've seen firsthand how that can go wrong, because I've had a number of couples where they were virgins till they got married, and she has vaginismus, and then sometimes he even develops erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are young people.
These are young people. It shouldn't be happening, right?
No, and the women often have not a clue about how to orgasm because they've never masturbated.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's upsetting, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know to what extent it's coming out of the porn model. I don't know where it's coming from. But
mm-hmm.
when I was, I've been working this past year on my new college talk for college students, and I was just about off to North Carolina to give it. A reporter from the paper called.
Yes.
She's interviewing me. She said, well, what do you think about masturbation? And I said, what do you think about masturbation? I said, what's going on? And she said, I guess it's natural or normal for guys to do it. And I said, and it's not normal for women to do it. And she said, well, no, women around here think it's pretty nasty.
Oh, and you have that on your website, female masturbation, nasty.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
And so,
Bible Belt? Is that?
Well, that's what I thought. I thought, Carolina, even though North Carolina is a pretty liberal state in a lot of
mm-hmm.
ways,
mm-hmm.
or parts of it are, parts of it certainly aren't. But so I checked in with a sex educator who's a young woman who's just graduated about 2 years ago from a college, and she's now doing sex education at one of the most liberal colleges on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, tell me this isn't true. And she said, mm-hmm. oh, not only isn't it true, she said, you know, about 2 weeks ago I'd had an RA in one of the dorms ask me to come in and do a workshop on female masturbation because mm-hmm. she said the RA thinks that it's so many young women think it's just not right.
Fascinating.
And she ended
no
up
idea.
Getting. She ended up, the RA, getting a lot of negatives from people because she scheduled this workshop.
Mm.
And then I called an instructor at another West Coast college that's probably one of the most liberal in the country, and I asked her,
mm-hmm.
you know, I said, is this true? And she said, oh, God, this is why I have, you know, an assignment where the women need to look at their, everyone needs to look at their genitals and write me a paper about what their feelings are. Because she said the negative perception of women is just really great about masturbation and sometimes about their own genitals. So where is this coming from? You know, they can let a guy do anything he wants to, but they're not allowed to touch themselves and you know, masturbate or give themselves orgasm. It's kind of fascinating. I don't know where it's coming from.
I don't know. I hope you'll tell us what you find out. I mean,
yeah.
what we discovered at UCLA was that women who don't masturbate as teenagers up until about the age of 25 typically don't reach orgasm.
Yeah.
That they haven't laid down those genital nerve tracts, genital to brain nerve tracts. And also they don't know their own response. Well, you write about this in your book. You got to, for 11 years, I co-led two women's sexuality groups where all the women had had sexual abuse, sexual trauma of some sort. And they all, at the beginning of the group, were not having orgasms. And we'd send them home with homework assignments.
Uh-huh.
And they would start to look at their genitals and masturbate and maybe use. My experience, even recently, in the last few years, is that women who don't have orgasms and who haven't masturbated, they almost always need vibrators. They need that extra stimulation to reach orgasm.
After they, if they're able to then reach an orgasm with a vibrator, are they able to backtrack and just reach it with their fingers, or do you think they'd always need the vibrator?
Well, that's a very good question, Paul, because I back to the groups that I co-led with Dr. Uh-huh. Maria Flaherty back in San Jose 20 years ago. If we had what we call vibrator ladies, we'd suggest that they put down the vibrators slowly and try using their fingers because that was a little more partner friendly. But some women just can't without, they need that extra stimulation. But as you know, women vary a lot, so it's not hopeless.
Yeah. Well,
but the idea of a woman being able to reach orgasm and experience that high, and then the payoff is there for having sex. So, you know, a lot of low-desire women, once they can reach orgasm, become less low-desire.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. So I guess, there's a lot to explore there. But why perfectly normal young women who have not been abused...
Yeah,
have negative feelings about touching themselves is just, it's simply amazing.
Well, it is amazing to me, and I'm not as current as I probably should be about what young women on college campuses are thinking. So it must be fascinating for you to, because you go to a lot of college campuses, and many times your book, Guide to Getting It On, is used as a textbook in the sex ed classes.
Yeah, I'm very, very fortunate in that way. But
well,
when you know, if I'm speaking on a college campus, and then mm-hmm. I sometimes, you know, some of the sororities or something will arrange
mm-hmm.
for me to talk to groups of women alone, and almost always their questions are about orgasms and about birth control.
Of course.
You know, you think by the time a woman is 20 years old,
mm-hmm.
it's sad in our culture and our society that she still has questions about orgasms and birth control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That just
but it's true.
But
well, Dr. Paul, we've come up to half past the hour, so We need to take a break. And when we come back, I'd like to continue our conversation about women and orgasms and get into a bit about touch, because that's so important. And then you have a wonderful chapter in your book, When Your System Crashes. So we should talk about erectile dysfunction, too. There's still so much to talk about. And fortunately, listeners, Dr. Paul has agreed to come back. It may not be for a couple of months, but we'll have a part two with him, I hope. So stay with us, and we'll come back with more sex talk. Thank you. Oh, we're back already. That's great. So I have, I like a niece or a nice, I'm not sure how, Nin's work. She was a woman way ahead of her time who wrote about erotica in, I guess, the 20s and 30s. So here's this quote that I love. Electric flesh arrows traversing the body. A rainbow of color strikes the eyelids. A foam of music falls over the ears. It is the gong of orgasm. Isn't that poetic?
Yep, sounds poetic.
And the good news is that the more orgasms you have, this is good news for women, the more orgasms you're likely to have in the future. But without people like Dr. Paul and his great book, The Guide to Getting It On, proper sex education and an opportunity to practice, that's what a lot of these young college women need to give themselves permission to do, I think, that they won't successfully achieve the synergy of mind, body, and spirit to release this very unique experience. It's about letting go. It's about so many other things. It's very complex, and you describe it well in your book.
Well, it's a challenge to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having to pay attention, too much attention to what's going on around you.
Yeah.
If you're constantly needing to kind of monitor the world around you, then it's really hard to let go. I think I think women have a harder time with the way their brain is structured, letting go.
Yeah, we have a bigger corpus callosum.
Well, but once they do let go,
mm-hmm.
and I think maybe they have a little bit more potential than men do for sexual pleasure. So it's an interesting, it's a higher activation to get there. But I think once they do get there, it's got some pretty nice possible outcomes.
Like ecstasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ecstasy is pretty special. And of course,
it requires a lot of trust.
A lot of trust. The woman has to feel safe.
Yeah, very safe. And I don't think that the porn model certainly teaches guys that one of your jobs, you know, one of your first jobs in helping a woman feel pleased sexually is to create a sense of safety.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys miss this, and that's why some people over 50 have better sex, because they're understanding this better. In fact, there is a link between longevity and orgasm frequency, and this has been shown in a number of studies, that people who enjoy regular satisfying sex life, that would be regular orgasms too, it turns out they're less stressed, less depressed, and generally more well physically, mentally, and emotionally. And one of the studies that I really appreciate is, you probably know about this, Lewis Terman, 1921, Stanford University psychologist, recruited 1,500 elementary students, school students, and then followed them. And then he passed away, and then his research was picked up by two other guys. So they found, this is called the Longevity Project, and it went over 80 years. But the part I liked the best, of course, was what they found was for longevity, Have More Fun in Bed. Almost 60 years before Sex and the City, Terman got women to talk about their sexual satisfaction. The average amount of time they spent being intimate with their husbands and the frequency of their orgasms. The records show that the women who most often reached climax most often lived longer. Well, I find that very good news.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Have you heard of that Terman study?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, I will send you maybe a link for it because it's got some good stuff in it. But the sex, of course, I like that, the sex part that I just shared
yeah.
the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as usual, you're funny in your book. And when you dispense information with some humor, it's so much more digestible. You can access it. Some people can access it better. And you write, regarding women and orgasm, nobody in his or her right mind has ever worried about a woman having too many orgasms, except for the people who live next door or the apartment below. I liked that.
Well, we hopefully don't worry about that at all.
No.
I don't think that is anyone's concern.
And actually, women breathing and vocalizing more with orgasms, and sometimes I encourage my female clients, if they're quiet during sex, to, you know, fake it till they make it, right? Just breathe more, scream more.
Do you think that helps?
Yeah, because it puts more oxygen in the body, okay. And it can raise the levels of arousal.
Uh-huh.
It's all part of letting go. Now, in the beginning, it'll feel kind of strange, but it can work.
Wow, that's great information.
We should talk off the air more. I'll share. But I also like what you say in your book. Some people get a sense of smug superiority by claiming how many orgasms they either had or gave to a partner. They confuse sex with pinball. That's great. There is this, a lot of guys have this idea, and one of your, Evan the Bricklayer wrote, I can't remember a single one who I could make do anything, let alone have an orgasm. But a lot of guys still have this idea that they make the woman have an orgasm. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I don't...
It's about responsibility, isn't it? About the woman taking responsibility for her own orgasm.
Well, yeah, it isn't really her orgasm if you're the one who makes her have it, is it?
Yeah, I mean, a man can be a skilled lover, I think.
Yeah.
I know, and that can help, but it's still her responsibility to stay focused, to stay centered, to let go.
It's also their responsibility as a couple.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And again, that's not always easy to communicate, to talk about what works, what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always challenges to just evolve a language which feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, do you use kind of crude slang or do you use Latin that feels stiff and awful? What do you use? How do you even come up with the words? And
a problem for many people. And I bet that'll be on your new sex ed site. How do you talk? What language do you use?
Well, when a big part of my new talk is talking about using the word clitoris. In fact, when I was giving a college talk not too long ago, there were you know, a lot of males in the audience, and the woman who's in charge of student health at the college, she said to me, you know, did you see that those rows of men in the back, you know, young males? And I said, yeah. Do you realize that that's probably the first time in their lives where they ever heard another male model how to use the word clitoris, or even say the word clitoris?
Wow.
It really shocked me. But I think she was correct.
It shocked me. I think I've been... I used to, when my daughter was at Georgetown University, I used to go occasionally and give sex ed talks, but that was in the late 90s. I haven't been around college campuses lately. I would have thought there'd be more evolvement, but apparently not. Maybe there's been too much porn, which has derailed people.
I think porn has derailed us, but I think... you know, we've also gone through that. I don't think we've recovered from the early 90s when Coughlin Elders was fired for a Surgeon General for, you know, recommending that teenage boys masturbate.
That was awful that happened.
But I really don't think we've recovered from that. I don't think we're any better today. What we've done is it's even worse in some ways, as parents have just advocated. And so who are you going to turn to? Well, you turn to porn, because at least porn's about pleasure. Most of the messages kids are given today are about all the things that can go wrong. You know, we equate teaching, you know, about condoms as teaching about lovemaking. Well, no. Teaching about condoms is teaching about condoms. It has nothing to do with the interchange or communication or anything. But as long as it's harm reduction, as long as we talk about all the things that are wrong, then that's safe. But if we start to get into pleasure, boy, that gets dangerous. And with the schools, what's interesting is you'd think it was just the really conservative parents who are opposed to talking about pleasure. It's across the board. Parents are afraid. They think that it's going to mean their kids are going to start having sex. Well, kids are going to start having sex just like they started having sex. Not going to change anything. You know, keeping them dumb is not going to change a thing.
So when you speak to college campuses and you talk about pleasure and you talk about birth control, but you must mention some of these issues that are paradoxical in many ways.
Like which ones? What are your thoughts?
About that pleasure is dangerous and we've got to do the harm reduction because that's the safer thing to do. And so how do you circle around that and then address it?
Yeah, I've got 1 hour. And so one of the hardest things is figuring what you include in that 1 hour. So I don't talk too much about what's missing. I try to focus on my thought is that certainly for most young males, they want to be the best they can possibly be in bed.
Oh, sure.
And so I try to focus on how you make that happen.
And how you pay attention to your partner.
Yeah. And how, you know, this isn't... the porn model is not going to allow that to happen.
Exactly.
And I try not to make anyone feel shame or bad about watching porn, but it's just a reality.
Right.
Porn isn't going to help.
Yeah.
It's not going to help anyone be closer. It's not going to help you maintain a good sexual relationship in a long-term, you know, in a long-term relationship. It's just not going to help. And so I try to make it upbeat and positive. And in my new talk, I've got over 300 slides in a 1 hour talk. And each of those slides I created to, you know, they don't have any text, but they're images that make it so I don't have to say part of a sentence. And that's an important thing with today's young adults because they've grown up with images.
Yes, that's very good.
You know, they don't good luck if you can get them to read more than 300 words on a particular subject. That's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But, so if you've got an image that can make up for 50 of the words, then you're ahead of the ball game right there.
So you have been learning how to speak to these young people, how to reach them. Very smart, Dr. Paul.
I'm trying, because it's different. It's way different. If we try to have the same lecture that we did in 1990, it's not going to work, because in 1990, they didn't have the Internet. They had some Usenet groups, but that was it. In 1990, when you talked about a phone, it was still something that was either plugged in the wall or had an antenna
that
you held in your hand, right?
That's right.
Today, when they talk about phones, just a few years ago, you or I would see, you know, everyone would talk about smartphone versus a regular phone. Well, now, if you say smartphone, you sound like a dinosaur. To a young adult, a phone is a smartphone.
Oh, yes.
Why would you call it a smartphone? unless you are someone who has one of those geeky old phones, right, that doesn't, that doesn't have LTE or 4G.
So, this hour is just going way too quickly. I did want to get into a little bit about touch, and I think our part two will have to address when your system crashes, your chapter 54, at least in my edition, maybe next time. But I like what you have to say in your book. Some people struggle to get fully into their bodies. Some have trouble relaxing enough to enjoy what is being shared with them sexually. Learning, and I love this suggestion, learning to massage and be massaged might help your body put down its armor. If it's anxiety-producing at the beginning, go slowly and try to enjoy the gains you're able to make. That is brilliant advice. my good friend and colleague is Stella Resnick, and she says this, failure to thrive has never been documented after infancy. But the fact that lack of touch can cause death, even during a brief period of life, shows how important it is. Think of touch as a nutrient transmitted through the skin. Cuddling and massage are deeply nurturing and relaxing, and they're fundamental to great sex. And aren't they? I mean, I just have known after 32 years of this work that if people are relaxed before they have sex, often because of erotic massage, massaging each other, their sex is so much better.
Well, in the old days, we used to call that foreplay.
I know.
but you still call
it foreplay.
You're absolutely right, though, even before foreplay is feeling relaxed and massage. But again, that's so opposed to the porn model where you go right for the crotch.
Mm-hmm.
If not, your porn's pretty boring if you showed any foreplay.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we do that? How do we get to that? Hopefully by the time people get to be middle-aged or older, they get it. The important, I don't know. What are you seeing? Did they reach a point in life where they get the importance of slowing it down? And
yeah, I think a lot of guys do. A lot of guys after 50 do become more romantic and slow down. And women become a little more assertive and say what they want and need. So that works out pretty well in the bedroom. But I'm reminded of an ancient survey, 1985, Ann Landers. She had more than 90,000 readers answer the question, would you be content to be held close and treated tenderly and forget about the act? 72% of her female readers chose cuddling. How about that? 72%.
Yeah.
Now, that was in 1985. My guess is that there's still a lot of women who really just are so desirous of having more holding and cuddling and massaging. And women often respond to more touch. Men are often a little more visual. So what I suggest to some of my clients is, hey, ladies, you dress for success, dress for sex. Dress for sex, wear something, do a little sexy striptease. That'll be for your guy. And then he'll give you a massage, and that'll be for you. Doesn't that seem to be fair?
Yes, sure does. It's such a challenge. It's also a whole different challenge is if you're older and you're in a new relationship, whereas if you're in a relationship that's been there for 40 years or 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it's also, we try to be sensitive to that. I sometimes think it could be a little easier if it's a new relationship, as awful as that is to say.
No, but it's true. Helen Fisher's work kind of confirms that, too.
Well, so I think the challenge is for those who mm-hmm. have 20-year relationships or even 10-year relationships.
Mm-hmm.
How do you backtrack and put the tenderness and some of the desire back into it? It's hard. It's hard after you've raised children together. It's hard after you've had to pay mortgage payments every mm-hmm. for 20 years. Boy, that remains the challenge today, just like it was the challenge 30 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah. So the brain produces dopamine when there's some novelty. So one of the suggestions I make to couples who've been married a long time and they're monogamous and they need a little jump start on their sex life is to trick the brain into producing more dopamine, the hormone of arousal, which needs novelty, so you make love in different places, and especially vacation sex. You know, people...
Yeah, and leave your phone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and leave your phone. Right. Leave... So many people on vacations take... That is just not a good idea. I think it's stupid. Unplug this vacation.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have any tips for people to spark up their long-term relationships? Mm. Relationship.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting. Different things come to mind at different times.
Mm-hmm.
I was having to find some photos for my illustrator to work from for perineal massage.
Oh yeah.
And I guess because it so often has to do with pregnancy, the illustrations are just so awful. You look at them. Mm-hmm. There's nothing mm-hmm. sensual about it. But like I found this website, which has nothing, it has a whole section of maybe 50, 30, 40 minute videos of nothing but erotic massage.
Really? What is the website?
What is it? It's Hegra Art, HEGRE-ART.com. And if I had a teenage son,
mm-hmm.
I'd get him a 6-month membership and say, "You watch each and every one of those. Not one of them is it about a penis going inside a vagina.
I love it.
About erotic massage, and the thing is, it's done with such high video values. You know, it looks incredible, and of course, no one's over 35, but still."
Yeah.
You're spending most of the time looking at their genitals and how they do the erotic massage.
I love this.
And that's like, wow.
Could you repeat that? And the
Yeah, let me see real quick.
Maybe you could send it to me after we stop the show, and I'll put it, because I do a review of the show, a synopsis, and I'll include that. If you don't mind sending
here,
it to me.
It's H-E-G-R-E.
H-E-T-R-E.
Hyphen. A-R-T, art.com.
Okay.
And there's a tab that's one that's just massage.
Okay,
the other
good.
Tab, I wouldn't, you know, it's kind of like an old, it's sort of like the online version of what Playboy or Penthouse used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the one are the videos on the erotic massage, and they are really, really quite something. And it's under, let's see, massage is like the middle tab between
middle
travel
tab,
and
okay.
shop. It's called
good
massage.
Suggestion.
And I would definitely take a look at that because
yeah,
you know, things like that are so different. And that's there is some good porn out there, but God, you have to sort through a bunch of garbage.
You do, and no question about it. So we are coming up to the end of the program. It's gone so quickly, and of course, we didn't get in most things, but I'm hoping I can entice you back to this program maybe in the fall?
Well, let's see what we can do. I don't know what the schedule's going to be
I know.
But we'll figure it out.
And love to be able to promote your new website, which is going to be just great, I'm sure.
Okay.
So let's, you know, could you just come up with a tip so that couples' lives can go from agony to ecstasy?
I'm so sorry, but I wouldn't even try.
Okay.
I wish I could, but that would be to...
I know.
It's just way more complex than that.
I know, it really is. Okay, then I'll
life
offer, my own, little, I'll offer my own little tidbit.
Good.
Don't rush into sex. Go slowly. And get into sex only when you're comfortable and all your conditions are met. Just go slow down. I tell my couples all the time, slow down.
Very good.
That's
See,
pretty
you
good,
did a
it?
Way better job than I did.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
Thank you.
You are the best.
Care. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye, everybody. Tune in next week. Same place. Bye-bye.